On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. State lawmakers may go another year without passing legislation to set stricter state timelines for processing sexual assault kits. And this inaction comes even as sexual assault victims and advocates had lobbied for bills to ensure evidence is analyzed in a timely manner. What do you think advocates for survivors of sexual assault should be telling lawmakers in Wisconsin and Washington, for that matter? How could our state or federal laws be improved? We're at 800-642-1234. Ilsa Connect is Director of Policy and Advocacy at the Joyful Heart Foundation in New York. The group was founded in 2004 by actress Mariska Hargitay, known for her role as a police detective on the NBC show Law & Order Special Victims Unit. Ilsa, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, Assembly Bill 844 that was introduced and passed by the Assembly last month has everything that the original bill had when that bill came out last May, timeline for collecting, processing, storing rape kits. Why do you oppose the latest bill?
Well, I want to start by saying that Joyful Heart Foundation is working in Wisconsin to support local stakeholders like the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Many prosecutors, law enforcement professionals, sexual assault nurse examiners, and survivors who have collaborated for months and months behind legislation that would set those timelines for rape kit testing and bring rights to survivors of sexual assault. And that bill has been stalled in the committee for months and months and months. And they came together as the professionals and the experts that they are who handle rape kits and every day work with sexual assault survivors and decided what would be the best bill. The new bill, Speaker Voss's bill, basically 844, was the result of just about a week of work and zero collaboration with those local stakeholders.
You attended the public hearing early last month where lawmakers heard a lot of emotional testimony, including from Amy Dean from Sauk City.
The state that I know and love failed to test 6,000 sexual assault kits. They allowed those kits to collect dust on shelves. I lost faith in those institutions that were meant to protect us, and I lost faith in my legislators. So I'm begging you to help me protect my daughter and survivors of sexual violence.
Ilsa, what did you take away from that hearing?
That was very, very emotional and very inspiring. And again, the people that testified that day, many of them were involved in writing this legislation. And many of them have been doing this work for decades. And I was really overwhelmed, actually, with just the feeling of being with those people and seeing this bill that they've worked so hard on die for party politics. You know, I said it there. You take a bill that these professionals who know what working with sexual assault survivors is like, and they know about handling rape kits and collecting rape kits and testing rape kits, and you take a bill that literally impacts whether people live or die. You know, they get violated or victimized, have their lives forever altered, and put a provision on it that hasn't been discussed and that is very well known that half the assembly members will not support. You put these poison pills, like an immigration-related provision that none of the sexual assault advocates are in support of. And like I said, that's how you kill a bill. And in just watching these professionals who had put their hearts and souls into this work and this legislation, it was really, I just felt really emotionally overwhelmed by that. It was really sad.
We're discussing efforts in state capitals to improve how sexual assault cases are handled. ILSA Connect is with the Joyful Heart Foundation. That's a national group. You can join in. Do you support Assembly Bill 844, the legislation that Republicans recently introduced and passed in the Assembly aimed at addressing sexual assault? What do you want to know about how other states handle evidence from sexual assault cases? We're at 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Ilsa, after the hearing, State Representative David Steffen said other legislation aimed at preventing backlogs didn't have enough support to make it through the Capitol.
Regardless of what the issues were, the reality is it wasn't happening. And so this is an opportunity to make some substantial positive changes. And my goodness, I think we can agree that this bill is a tremendous step forward. Is it, you know, perfect? Find me a piece of legislation that is.
So he says this has enough good to outweigh the potential bad. Do you agree there?
No. I think the people of Wisconsin are smart enough to decipher what this is all about. Speaker Voss does not want to give the Attorney General and the Governor a win. And, you know, this is party politics on steroids. And I said it in the hearing, I have never experienced this before on this issue. This is a nonpartisan issue. Across the country, we work with state legislatures day in and day out. You know, 30 states and Washington, D.C. have passed legislation mandating the testing of rape kits and, you know, put in provisions for the handling from the hospital to the lab. And clean bills that focus only on rape kit testing and survivors for victims' rights, not immigration, not school choice, clean bills. And they've passed those legislatures in a bipartisan fashion, and they pass them unanimously.
Well, let's
it's very
look,
clear what's going on here.
Well, let's look at that first piece that was added to the legislation, immigration. The provision would require police to report undocumented immigrants to federal authorities if they are accused of sexual assault. What are your concerns with establishing this kind of policy?
I'll say I am not an immigration expert. I do know that anti-violence experts say that provisions like this will keep victims from reporting. This kind of language has been discussed and fought all over the country. I'm not an expert in that. What I will say is it doesn't belong in this bill. This is a bill about testing and handling rape kits. And this is not relative to this bill. So, you know, next year we'll come back, we'll get a clean bill that doesn't include immigration provisions or school choice provisions. And we will be able to pass that bill. You know, I think we just have to bring this back to the heart of the matter, and that is the survivors of sexual assault, these 6,000, almost 7,000 untested rape kits that were found in Wisconsin. And each single one of those represents a survivor who did everything society asked them to do, you know, preserve evidence, go to a hospital, possibly wait hours, have a very intrusive and exhaustive physical examination of their body done, which has become a crime scene. And have that evidence collected in a rape kit. The kit then sits on a shelf gathering dust. And that obviously sends a terrible message to survivors that what happened to them doesn't matter and that we're not taking your case seriously. You have to make a clean bill that doesn't include these other provisions, that only focuses on the topic of sexual assault kits and testing and handling those kits.
Talking with Ilsa Connect, a policy director at the Joyful Heart Foundation, a national group advocating on behalf of survivors. We're looking at the impasse at the state capitol over how to prevent a future backlog of untested sexual assault kits and the competing bills. Neither is expected to make it to the governor's desk. Are you a survivor of sexual assault? What do you think of how the state handles these cases? How much would you want the state to establish a tracking system for rape kits? Join in with your questions, your story, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call announced last month that more than 1,000 tested sexual assault kits have produced DNA that's been added to a national database of DNA profiles. And testing on more than 4,400 sexual assault kits was completed back in November to address a backlog of kits that dated back decades. After Wisconsin authorities discovered a backlog of untested evidence from sexual assault cases, how did that make you feel? How did you talk with your family and friends? What questions linger about that backlog? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ilsa Connect is policy director at the New York-based Joyful Heart Foundation, and she stays with us. So one provision in Assembly Bill 844 would allow survivors to join Wisconsin's school voucher program. And Republican Representative Janelle Branchen says victims deserve eligibility so they could more easily switch schools and find a healing way from their peers.
I can tell you from me growing up that there were girls that unfortunately took their lives because that's how they were known in their high school. And I don't think there's anything more tragic than being unable to heal from a situation like that.
So should students be automatically eligible for vouchers if they're a victim of sexual assault, Ilsa?
Once again, I'll just say I am not an expert on school choice. And the fact that we're even having this conversation in the context of speaking about a bill about rape kit testing just shows you how far off we're getting from the topic. You know, there are very good reasons to help survivors of sexual assault leave a school if they want to. A lot of focus has been on potentially removing the offender. That is a very complicated topic, and that is a conversation that needs to happen in Wisconsin. It needs to happen among the professionals that work with survivors.
Do other states,
before it is put into legislation.
Do other states have laws granting students eligibility for switching schools after a sexual assault?
I can't comment on that. I'm not an expert in that area, unfortunately. Sorry.
No, that's okay. But what kind of challenges do survivors typically come across while trying to switch schools after a trauma like that?
I don't know. And I'm sure they're big. I am sure they're big because there are, many, many barriers to staying in the school where your perpetrator is or leaving the school and finding another school. I'm sure, especially in rural areas, just as a person who pays attention to these issues, I'm sure that there are great barriers, but I am just not prepared to really comment on that. And once again, I think the experts in that state need to get together and talk about that before it's put into legislation.
One of your foundation's big priorities for Wisconsin is establishing a dedicated revenue stream for funding for testing rape kits. Mm-hmm. Why is that important?
The reforms that we propose states adopt include inventorying rape kits, which Wisconsin has done and found nearly 6,000 or 7,000 nearly, making sure that all of those are being tested. And under the several attorneys general now in this state, that is happening. Mandating the testing of newly collected kits in a timely manner. That is the only way you can prevent another backlog from happening again. Making sure that victims have a right to know where their kit is, because most of them leave the hospital and never, ever hear again. And it's very detrimental to their healing to not have that information. Establishing a tracking system to know where rape kits are at all times. That is a huge accountability and transparency provision. If you can track your shoes on Zappos or your package on Amazon, we know we can track rape kits in that same way. And we should do that so that we have oversight over what is happening with those kits and that survivors can log on to that system, that tracking system, and see where their kit is at all times. And then, of course, that all costs money. So we are not going to come into a state and help the local stakeholders pass legislation and not support the fact that that costs money. And we've been very successful in other states. Much of the bills that have passed and the appropriations that have come through for rape kit reform are a tiny, tiny percentage of what a state spends every year. And public safety is a top priority of government. Keeping the public safe is a top priority. And we believe very strongly that states have to make that investment in their communities and in the public to make sure that they are safe. Because this is a public safety issue. When these kits sit on shelves, dangerous people stay on the streets and they commit crimes over and over and over again until they're stopped.
Well, let's talk about the storage of evidence. During the public hearing we talked about earlier last month, Attorney General Josh Call had concerns about Assembly Bill 844 requiring the state crime labs to store evidence for up to 50 years.
Those kits are stored at local law enforcement agencies around the state. And again, the legislature in this legislation has not made an appropriation that would fund the creation of storage space for that. It's not clear whether the state crime lab needs to divert resources to collecting sexual assault kits from around the state.
So the Republicans, though, amended the bill so it was clear that local agencies would store kits for up to 50 years, not the state crime lab. What would that system align with the practices you see going on around the country?
Retaining rape kits is very important. The rape kits that are not tested, by the way. So when you put in place procedures to say every single kit connected to a reported sexual assault where a survivor has said, I want this kit, my case to go forward, I want this kit to be tested, should be tested in a timely manner. There's a small percentage then of survivors who say, I want to get this evidence collected so I can then have time to think about whether or not I can participate in the criminal justice system and whether or not that time is now or whether or not it's later, because it's not always the right time for survivors at that moment. And so keeping these kits as long as the statute of limitations, when the case can be brought and charges can be brought, or the 50 years, which is a guideline that a lot of states are using, that is the right thing to do. And the next question is, of course, where do you keep those kits? National best practices say those kits should be kept at law enforcement agencies or at the state lab. And states are looking at this in a different way. New York State is creating a central repository for kits that would be responsible for keeping track of them. And then if a survivor says 10 years later, I want my kit to go to the lab, that central repository takes care of that and sends it to the lab. So there are lots of different ways to do this, but best practice is either at law enforcement agencies or either at a state crime lab. You know, and of course, there needs to be provisions in place to fund that and make sure that adequate storage is available.
We're talking with Ilsa Connect with the Joyful Heart Foundation, a national group that advocates on behalf of sexual assault survivors. You can still join in at 800-642-1234. So, Ilsa, what would it mean if Wisconsin lawmakers are unable to pass any legislation this session? What might effect would it have waiting another year?
I can tell you that lives will be affected. And I say that with a very heavy heart. I, in my testimony, talked about young women who all died because a rape kit that could have stopped the perpetrator wasn't tested in time. There are preventable crimes happening every day because rape kits are sitting on shelves. I will tell you their names: Melissa Bittler in Oregon, Marlene Rose in Massachusetts, and Randir Kaur in California. These women all died because the evidence that could have stopped the perpetrator from being on the street and victimizing over and over again wasn't tested in time. So right now, Wisconsin is going to have to wait another year. One more year is going to go past, and that is just not okay. Survivors deserve better, and the people of Wisconsin deserve better. I'm not trying to be dramatic, but these stories are real.
Could another backlog be forming in Wisconsin right now?
Sure. Oh, yes. Every single day, rape kits are being collected, and there's no policy to say what to do with them. So law enforcement are still working under, legally, the same policies that they've had, which is nothing. So right now, when there's no policy on the books, individual detectives or investigators are making the decision of what happens with each kit. And what we have seen in places like Wisconsin and in every state across the country, that is dysfunctional. And all too often, the decision is made not to send a kit for testing when it should be sent. So, of course, the kits are going to start piling up again. And the only way to mandate or to make sure that a rape kit backlog doesn't happen again is to mandate the testing of kits.
The Joyful Heart Foundation had urged Wisconsin authorities to discover the backlog in 2014, later urged federal authorities to establish a grant that paid for testing. What is the status now of advocating for federal resources to help states?
Well, the government has been making this investment every year, and we have more, well, not we, there are more than 60 recipients of the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative grant. Wisconsin is one of them. And the new solicitation for those grants just came out last week. And so we would encourage local stakeholders, local governments, local officials can apply for those grants. Obviously the grant that Wisconsin has is a statewide grant, but local jurisdictions can apply as well. Those grants can pay for testing untested kits. They can pay for tracking systems. They can pay for investigating and prosecuting cold cases that come out of testing and in reengaging and working with survivors of those crimes. So the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative is has really changed the landscape of rape kit reform and has provided that necessary funding to make sure these kits don't sit on shelves any longer.
Ilsa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Ilsa Connect is Director of Policy and Advocacy at the Joyful Heart Foundation in New York. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with State Senator Patrick Teston from Stevens Point. We look at a package of bills aimed at water quality. We'll be back for more State Cap after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you have aligned to State Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point. We'll touch down on legislation awaiting action in his chamber as the Senate prepares to adjourn this month. Some of the topics that we'll go over are farm relief package, tax cuts, elder abuse. And let's start with our drinking water. How do you want lawmakers to improve water protections? Are you concerned about pollution where you live? Where do you get your water from? Is it private wells or municipal systems? And by the way, how does your water taste? Join the State Cap 800-642-1234. Patrick Teston is a Republican state senator who represents the 24th District in central Wisconsin, including Stevens Point and Wisconsin Rapids. He was elected to the Senate in 2016, serves as vice chair of the Senate Republican Caucus. State Senator Teston, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Great to be back on. Thanks for having me.
So before we turn to water quality, let's touch on the mass shooting last week in Milwaukee. These tragedies often renew policy conversations in state capitals, whether that's looking at gun policies or mental health policy or something else. Do you see a need for lawmakers to take action this year?
I think they're certainly worth having a conversation. Obviously, it's tragic anytime we have one of these incidents, and the fact that we've had a couple of these now here in the state, it's really, I'm at a loss for words. It's unfortunate. But what's most important, I think we need to take a look at is this is really a mental health crisis. And I know oftentimes when we have these conversations, people want to point to the tool that was used. And in this instance, it was a firearm. But obviously there was an underlying issue or a number of issues that went unaddressed that led this individual to commit this heinous act. And really, we need to be taking a look at the root cause of these problems. And from my perspective, especially in this incident, as well as the others, it really boils down to that we have a mental health crisis here in this state, in this country, that we need to take action on.
So you would look to bills that really focus on mental health reforms?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As opposed to taking some of the approaches that have been suggested by some folks in the Capitol, whether it's dealing with universal background checks or red flag laws, there's no data to suggest that had these laws been enacted, it would have prevented this incident at Molson Coors. And so I know that oftentimes can be a point of contention for some, but we really have to take a look and find the underlying issues that lead an individual to take actions like this. And rather than taking a look at just the tool that was used, let's try and get to the root cause of these problems.
Well, let's move on to water quality now. The Assembly approved a $10 million package of bills that are trying to address water pollution. Now these bills are in your chamber. What are the chances of all 13 bills being passed later this month?
I'm optimistic. So obviously, we had the recommendations come out of the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality. So earlier this session, Governor Tony Evers announced that 2019 was the year of clean drinking water. Then Speaker Voss announced that he was going to form a task force on water quality. And typically when speakers form task force, it's the Senate's typically not involved. And because this is such an important issue, I reached out to Speaker Voss and said, please incorporate the Senate. We need to work on this issue in a bicameral fashion to make sure that both houses have a seat at the table. And as we traveled around the state, over 13 stops in every corner of the state, we heard a lot of common themes, which is both good and bad. The bad news is that we know we have water quality concerns in every area of the state, whether it relates to nitrates, phosphorus, bacteria, PFAS. But the good news is the fact that more and more people are aware of this now. They're coming to the table, and we had stakeholders from every side of the issue provide suggestions, input, and give their feedback. And so the 13 recommendations that we have before us that came out of this task force, I'm optimistic that we'll be able to get a number of these to the governor's desk. So obviously, working with our colleagues right now in the Senate, there are a number of senators who weren't a part of this task force. And so myself and others, including Representative Rob Cole or Senator Rob Coles, are having conversations with our colleagues one-on-one to make the case why these bills are necessary, why it's important that we provide certainty for Wisconsinites when they go to their tap. They know that they have safe, clean water to drink.
Do you think the $10 million price tag is a sticking point for some Republicans?
There are certainly going to be those conversations that we have to have. And I think for some, $10 million may be a bit too much. However, it's hard to put a price tag on the ability to have clean water. The access to clean water, it's not a luxury. It's a necessity. We all need clean water to live. And so I know I'm going to be making the case as strongly as possible and within our caucus, the Senate Republican caucus, to get as many of these bills to the governor's desk as possible, because I do believe these 13 recommendations, they are a step in the right direction. They are by no means the end to this conversation. This is a starting point. And so I'm going to do what I can to ensure that we're educating members who weren't on the task force that these are good bills.
We're discussing state politics and bills on water protections with Senator Patrick Teston from Stevens Point. Where do you get your water? What concerns do you have? Have you taken a look at these 13 bills? What do you think? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Steve now in Stoughton. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for the conversation. Listen, Senator, I appreciate the work that you're doing, but here's my deal. When it comes to groundwater and drinking water, the legislature in the past 10 years or so has allowed standards to slip for people. They've increased pumping up in the Central Sands. They've allowed manure spreading to get out of control. And, you know, look, again, the work you're doing is good, but we shouldn't be spending more money to fix a problem that, had we listened to the experts before, they knew pumping water in the Central Sands would cause problems. They knew manure spreading would cause problems. So why can't we trust the science and be smart when we encounter this at the get-go instead of having to fix it when we have a problem?
Steve, thanks for the call. State Senator Teston, you represent part of the Central Sands region where water quality is a big concern because of nitrates from agricultural runoff.
Right, and that's absolutely correct. I represent the Central Sands, and so we're in an area of the state where we're considered the breadbasket. We produce a lot of vegetables and other types of row crops that go all around the world. Now, when it comes to the quantity issue in the Central Sands, the vast majority of the high-capacity wells that are permitted pump well below their allocation from the DNR. And right now, it's probably a good problem to have, and is that we have an overabundance of water right now in the Central Sands. So we have a high groundwater table right now with record precipitation. Many of those lakes that were down a few years ago are well above their historic high levels. Now, as it relates to nitrate contamination, one of the recommendations that came out of there was really a compromise bill that I had worked on with State Representative Scott Krug, along with State Representative Katrina Shankland, who represents the Stevens Point area, and that was to make changes to the well compensation program housed within the DNR as it relates to nitrate contamination, because nitrate contamination is the number one contaminant in our groundwater. And currently, the thing that we're trying to fix, when your well is contaminated, the only way you qualify for any state aid in the WellComp program is if you're over 40 parts per liter nitrate contamination, which is four times the EPA safe standard. And here's the kicker. You also have to have livestock on your land. So for tens of thousands of homeowners, they don't qualify for this program. So one of the recommendations that we had was to remove the livestock requirement. Also, we kind of put in a tiered system for homes with contaminated wells. So those homes who are over 40 parts per liter nitrate contamination would get first dibs at getting some grant dollars for money towards a new well. And then we step it down from there. And then for those individuals who are between 10 and 25 parts per liter nitrate contamination, we provide a source of money within the WellComp program to go towards grant dollars for remediation systems like reverse osmosis. So this is, again, a compromise bill. We had Representative Shankland and I had separate bills that were trying to deal with the same issue. And then when we sat down and took a look, reviewed a lot of the hearing information, we realized, okay, we can make significant changes to this program now, invest another additional $1 million into this program, which doubles it in size, increase the grant awards. And really, I think we came up with a really good compromise here that is going to provide significant relief to those homeowners who right now need to drill a new well, which is extremely expensive, can get some state aid. And this is one that, from my humble opinion, just from the area I represent, is one of my top priorities coming out of the task force.
One bill would create an Office of Water Policy within the UW system that would be led by an appointee of the governor. What do you hope this office would accomplish?
Yeah, I think this is another one of those recommendations that came out. And the hope is here that we can have this office take a look at best management practices, taking a look at our regulatory system, and really just kind of being a one-stop shop for water quality issues here in the state. And so this is not one of the bills I had authored. However, I think it's one that is definitely worth having a conversation on, and hopefully we can get this one to the governor's desk as well.
State Senator Patrick Teston stays with us as we talk about pending legislation in his chamber. The state Senate expected to meet once more this month before adjourning. What questions do you have for him? Do you live in Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, or another community in central Wisconsin? What are the priority issues where you live? You have a line, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. State Cap continues with Senator Patrick Teston. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We have State Senator Patrick Teston of Stevens Point here on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The legislature is getting close to the end of its two-year session with numerous high-profile bills still in limbo. What do you want lawmakers to do with the state's projected $620 million budget surplus? Do you think the farm relief bills adequately address the farm crisis and will keep family farms out of bankruptcy? Join in with your concerns, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Senator Teston is vice chair of the Senate Republican Caucus, and he stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Brad is joining us from Madison this morning. Hi, Brad. Brad, are you there? Nope, we have no Brad there. Senator Tustin, Brad was wondering where do PFAS sit in this 13 bill package, or how is the state addressing the PFAS contamination that we're seeing?
Yeah, so obviously this is a new issue that's been put on a lot of people's radar, and this one kind of hits close to home, literally, especially up in my hometown of Marinette, where I was raised, where significant PFAS contamination. We've seen few other hot spots around the area, a few places down in Madison and in Dane County. And so there have been a couple of proposals thrown out there. So one of them dealing with PFAS with firefighter foams, which was incorporated in the Speaker's Task Force on Water Quality. Another was introduced by Representative John Nygren and State Senator Dave Hansen, which was really, again, a compromise bill on a previous bill that Senator Hansen had authored that I believe was amended to a separate bill on the last day of the assembly. And so it's hard to say which of those proposals will get through. I think within the Senate, the firefighter foam PFAS bill has a easier time probably getting through as opposed to the bill that Senator Hansen and Representative Nygren worked on. But that remains to be seen as we kind of have these conversations and the gear up for the last day of session at end of this month.
Well, let's pivot now to tax cuts. Last week, Governor Evers vetoed Republicans' plan for an anticipated surplus in tax collections. And the governor had wanted a compromise to increase funding for schools. What do you see happening next in this debate over what to do about the tax revenue surplus?
Well, first off, I think it's unfortunate that the governor vetoed the tax cut proposal that we sent him. When you take a look at where the state stands within its fiscal position, we remain in a very strong point. And it's bolstered by the fact that we had an additional over $800 million in new projected revenue coming to the state. And from our standpoint in the legislature, that's money that should go back to the taxpayers, those individuals who pay into the state, and they should be reaping the rewards of our surplus. And so the bill that we gave him was in line with many of the things that he campaigned on as then candidate, talking about middle-class income tax cuts. This is now the second time that we have given him a tax cut bill that not only helps the middle class here in the state, but also buys down debt, puts money away in the rainy day fund, and provides tax relief for small businesses. We would have hoped that this would have been in line with his thinking, but that certainly wasn't the case. As it relates to his position on trying to fund the schools, well, we have provided record increases, not just in this budget, but in the previous budget to K-12 education. So I think kind of where we stand right now, it's going to be a matter of gridlock. I don't know if there's going to be much back and forth between the legislature and the governor's office right now, given the fact that the assembly is wrapped up for the session. So that money is probably going to lapse back into the general fund. And so when we begin to have conversations for the next biennial budget, we're going to have an additional $800 million to take a look at and start prioritizing where we're going to make those investments. But again, from my standpoint, and I think for many of my colleagues, is that when we have a surplus, it should go back to the taxpayers. We should buy down debt and ensure that, especially now in times when we have a strong economy and interest rates are low, that we're putting Wisconsin's fiscal health and fiscal future in the best possible shape.
With Wall Street plunging and the growing concern over the coronavirus outbreak, does that give you reservations about approving a tax cut over, say, growing the state's rainy day fund?
Well, and that's the beauty of it. I mean, we've been able to do both. And so statutorily, anytime we have a surplus, half of that has to go back into the rainy day fund. And right now we're sitting at around between $700 and $800 million in our rainy day fund, whereas opposed to going back to 2011, our rainy day fund had $2 million in it. And so thanks to sound governance and good budgeting, we've been able to ensure that for any type of storm that the state may face, whether it's dealing with an economic downturn or in this particular case, dealing with the coronavirus, if for some reason things were to turn around or slow down, Wisconsin's in a strong position to weather the storm.
We're discussing state politics with State Senator Patrick Teston from Stevens Point. Do you live in Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, or another central Wisconsin community? What questions do you have for your state senator? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's look at the farm crisis here. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says the Senate will likely pass legislation aimed at helping farmers. Which proposals seem to be getting the most traction right now with your caucus?
Yeah, so we haven't had a ton of conversation within our caucus yet on the proposals that were passed out of the Assembly. I believe this Wednesday the Senate Republicans will caucus and begin discussing kind of where the mood is and where the appetite is on a number of these proposals, whether it's the task force bills on water quality. And obviously, now we have the conversation of the farm aid that was passed through the Assembly last week. I'm of the mindset anything that we can do to help our farmers needs to be in the mix of the conversation. Obviously, we're all well aware that our aid community has continued to struggle in recent years because of low commodity prices, the fact that we've lost 49% of our dairy farms in the last 15 years. It has put a tremendous strain on our ag economy. And this is an economy that is a cornerstone and a foundation of our state. Last year was around $100 billion economic activity to the state. And so anything that we can do to assist our farmers and ensure that especially our small family farms don't become a thing of the past that we read about in textbooks 50 years from now, I'm certainly going to be making the case that we need to help our farmers out here in the state.
Do you see Republicans having any trouble finding agreement on these bills and how best to help family farms?
Yeah, I think right now one of the biggest challenges that we face is not necessarily Republicans versus Democrats. Oftentimes it's urban versus rural, and those sometimes can be the most contentious discussions that we have in the Capitol. And again, this is above party politics. It's really about making the case, and we need, for those of us who represent rural areas, educating our colleagues who come from more urban areas as to why we need to offer this support, why we need to help our ag economy and our farmers here in the state, because they do face a unique set of circumstances that many other businesses do not. I mean, these are individuals who are often on paper. They appear to be very wealthy, but in actuality, they're oftentimes cash poor. And so we want to provide a shot in the arm for our producers here in the state, because these are individuals who work 7 days a week, 365 a year, and provide vital resources for the state and this country.
Very quickly, elder abuse. After the new year, we talked about a package of bills that were getting traction that were aimed at curbing elder abuse. Where does this legislation stand now?
So right now, all the bills are sitting within the Senate for passage, and I'm really confident that we'll be able to get these ones done. This is obviously an issue that touches close to home for a lot of people, and unfortunately, we've seen a huge rise in elder abuse. Since 2001, we've seen an increase in these cases spike to 160%, and that's just of the cases that we know about. So for every case that gets reported, it's estimated that 24 go unreported. And the several recommendations that came out of that task force deal with financial abuse, making sure that our securities industries as well as our financial institutions can spot and put a hold on fraudulent activity, and then also increase in penalties for those who would prey upon the most vulnerable in our society, and then also expedite in court proceedings for those who prey upon our most vulnerable.
State Senator Teston, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Patrick Teston is a state senator who represents central Wisconsin communities, including Stevens Point. Just ahead, it's an hour-long conversation about home buying. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.